Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker here to tell you that the Stat Sheet Podcast is presented by Box Score Network. Box Score Network is your one-stop shop for all things NFL podcasts. You want game analysis, betting lines, hot takes, or fantasy advice? Well, check out Box Score Network and follow Box Score Network on Twitter at BScore Network for updates. Welcome back in, everybody. We appreciate you being with us as always. We have not one, not two, but three fascinating NFL primetime games this week to talk about. We've got teams losing around the NFL who should be winning, teams winning who should be losing. The great randomizer kicked in again this week. We've got injuries all over the place, unfortunately. We've got burning questions to hit later. We've got penalty flags to throw. Simon Short is in Studio A. Ronan Summers is in Studio B. I'm in Studio C. We're ready to go. This is the Stat Sheet Podcast. Let's get right to it. First of all, Monday Night Football, a game I think that was better than what most of us expected would be. Bengals and Jaguars. Simon, I'll let you get it started. Talk to us about your first impressions.
I mean, first impressions, I have to be realistic here, have to be Trevor Lawrence going down in this one. Quarterback for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Exits the game with about 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter. He gets his ankle stepped on by left tackle Walker Little, who, by the way, was also taken out of the game the rest of the time. And Joe Buck was like, Walker Little's just kind of standing there watching. Don't know what's going on with it. It's like, dang, man, can you say any more that dude got benched for stepping on the quarterback? But Lawrence gets stepped on, and then that same leg gets rolled up under him. He was real upset when the injury happened. He had to be very gingerly helped off the field all the way through the tunnel by two people. And obviously this game was great, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to talk about the game of Jake Browning and all the other stuff that went into it. But first thing coming out, Ben, is definitely Trevor Lawrence. We don't know the extent of the injury. We obviously don't know how long he could be out for, but Jacksonville at 8-4, really important to know what these next couple games are going to look like for them.
Ronan, I mean, I'll state the obvious. He's the franchise. If he's not there, season's over, right?
Yeah, absolutely, Ben. And the AFC South, you know, you got the Colts kind of creeping up. It can get pretty easy to fall back in that AFC South and that AFC playoff race in general. So, yeah, I was sitting there thinking to myself, as soon as he went down, that might be the season right there. It looks like, I believe tweets have come out that it's looking like an ankle sprain, and an MRI will be done tomorrow on Tuesday to kind of give us a better look on how that's going to look. But yeah, not looking great for the Jaguars. CJ Beathard stepped in, and he didn't look bad. 9-10 for 63 yards, right? But they weren't necessarily game-changing plays. There at the end, he was, I believe, I want to say it was an overtime. It was like back-to-back plays where he just tried to run the ball, just kind of dropped everything and tried to run. I think one might have been a sack and the other one might have been like a gain of one. They weren't great plays, and I don't think Trevor Lawrence would have been making that in such a big moment. So they were feeling it there, and I'm afraid they might be feeling it for the rest of the season if he can't return, Ben.
Simon, before we deep dive into the game, I feel the same way about this Lawrence Jaguars thing as I felt about Joe Burrow and the Bengals at the start of the season. Is I'd really rather just see the Jaguars take two losses over the next couple of weeks and get him back completely healthy, and then make your end of season run and your playoff run rather than try to rush him back. But you know, again, we don't know for sure exactly the extent. So, how are you feeling on that?
Ben, you were reading my mind, because while Ronan was talking, I was looking up their schedule the rest of the way. They have to play the Browns and the Ravens coming up back-to-back. Tough. Real, like, do you want Trevor Lawrence doing that hobbled? Do you want CJ Beathard doing that?
Also, no.
it's tough, man. It's tough. But, yeah, you're going to roll into those two games probably as heavy underdogs you would expect. On what's going to end up being a short week against the Browns here, to not have Lawrence, and then the Ravens on primetime, what do you want to do there? I mean, either way, that's a tough look. But let's say you roll with Beathard, and let's say you lose both those games. You go 8-5, and then you finish out the year with Tampa, Carolina, Tennessee. Right. You should be able to win two of those with a Lawrence that's coming back, or even with Beathard. At that point, he gets a couple games under him. But it is going to be important for Jacksonville to stay healthy on the offensive line. We saw Anton Harrison left the game for a couple snaps at one point at right tackle. Walker Little obviously left at left tackle. Cam Robinson is out. This team's going to have to stay healthy. They're going to have to start getting more efficient and reliant in the run game, because that was not there tonight. And this defense is going to have to start making some plays, because they're starting to go the wrong way defensively. All kind of stemming from that pass rush. We'll get into it. But whoever's playing quarterback these next 2 weeks, Hobbled Lawrence or C.J. Beathard against the Browns and Ravens, that's going to be a tough look, Ben.
Yeah, I agree. So we'll see how he looks over the next couple of days, but I think that's kind of what we're in for. Rolling back into the game itself now, turned out to be a really fun game. I mean, if you can ignore the fact that at one point we had two backups in there, as Simon mentioned before the podcast even started, if you ignore that, there's a lot still to play here for both teams. But it was a fun game, back and forth. What was your first impulse here?
Absolutely. I mean, 34-31 in overtime, right? So it was a great game. You know, we've had a string of luck. We talked about it before we started recording of this weekend of, you know, good primetime games, even in this one where we ended up with two backup quarterbacks to finish it out. It was still a pretty solid game and lots of drama. But the Bengals this weekend, Ben, I guess not weekend because it's a Monday, this beginning of the work week. Jake Browning, guys, this was the Jake Browning game. 32 of 37, 354 yards and a touchdown. And then he added two rushes for 22 yards and a touchdown. And I want to go back to that rush where he had Joe Buck just kind of, I don't remember if it was Buck or Aikman, but it had them, it had me, it had probably everybody kind of just like, what is he? Who is this guy? Okay, Jake Browning, I see you making Baker some people Mayfield miss. Duke. Exactly. He got the first, but you know what? You can go down. Sure, you're the backup quarterback. If you go down, the season really is chalked. But instead, hey, I'm going to go pick up this extra yardage, put my team in a good position. I love the performance by Jake Browning. And I want to show some love to the defense, specifically the rookies tonight. DJ Turner showed out with a few big tackles, big plays, and then as did Jordan Battle. I believe it might have been Battle who had the pass interference call that was kind of wishy-washy, right? But other than that, the two had a pretty solid game tonight, Ben.
Good shout out there on the rookies. We all, as a matter of fact, I wish we had talked more about rookies this year than we have, but there's been so much to talk about this year, we haven't put as much focus on it, but definitely a good call out there. Simon, I'm going to hit the run game here for the Bengals real quick, and you pivot off of that however you want. I thought it was important, and I always do for any quarterback, but especially if you've got a Jake Browning coming in, that you can run the football. And the Bengals were pretty effective doing it, and they were determined to do it. 31 carries, two of those by Jake, but 156 yards. The average per carry is 5. So, I mean, it was a good night, and then that just really sets up. It takes pressure off of Browning, so I love that. But then you had the high accuracy from Browning that Ronan already mentioned. So I love the rushing attack. It seemed to set the table for Browning's, you know, maybe this is a great night for him. I'm sarcastically hoping that we get a repeat of what we have with the Packers a few years ago with Matt Flynn, and that is Browning just goes off this year, and then the Bengals trade him for like a whole buku of draft picks, and somebody else signs him to a large contract, and then we go back to backup quarterback status 2 years later. But anyway, it was a great performance by Browning.
Man, that is so sad. That is so tough.
I'm terrible.
Poor Seahawks. We're gonna bookend this podcast with a set a tough loss for them. Yeah, I mean, listen, the run game, Chase Brown, getting him going in this one was huge because Mixon was still not effective, and what they're trying to do with him is still just not working. They had a couple weeks there in the middle of the season where that shotgun run game behind Orlando Brown was effective, and that was what they got him for because he's good at that sort of thing. And it hasn't stuck. This run game under Zach Taylor, once this offense has gotten fully formed, has not really become – you know, what what they hoped for, what they had originally designed. I don't know. But Chase Brown, they started to get him involved in this one. He was inactive between the San Francisco game and the Baltimore game. I don't know if he was injured. It just says did not play. And then he was active for the game last week against the Steelers, but he did not play an offensive snap. So they get him on the field in this one. He gets 9 carries for 61 yards. And it just provided that pop to the outside that they don't get from Mixon, who's a between the tackle, short yardage, kind of just grinded out runner. And then they were able to use Mixon on the goal line and get him his 2 touchdowns. But mixing it up, finding ways to involve the run game in a different way, what was really important for Browning. This team has started utilizing its tight ends in different ways over the last, I'd say, second half of the season here. Troy Aikman was noting a lot during the, especially in the first half. I didn't track it as much in the second half, but he noted a lot in the first half where they were keeping a tight end in for pass protection. So they were blocking with 6 a lot of times. And when you have guys like Jamar Chase and T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, you have enough offensive weapons to only roll out, you know, 3-4 pass catchers, 3-4 route runners, and block with 6. And that was really effective. And then that obviously having a good tight end blocking game helps in the run game as well. So they were doing some things pretty a little bit differently here now in week 2 of the backup quarterback that really did help out their offense, Ben.
Yeah, great points. I agree with everything that you're putting out there. Simon, I'm going to come back to you in a second on the Jaguars pass rush that you already alluded to. But before I do, Ronan, you had hit the Jaguars during the offseason over their defensive backfield and what you would have liked to have seen them draft. Well, that's water under the bridge. But here we are. We're deep into the season. They're giving up 300 yards to Jake Browning, backup quarterback for a Bengals team that has, you know, receivers, but it's not a dominant – shouldn't be a dominant offense, you wouldn't think, without Burrow in there. And it's not necessarily the first time the Jaguars have allowed this. Now, they're not dreadful against the pass, but you look at basically all the passing yardage they're giving up, they're in the lower third of the league, say the least. So how much does that bother you moving forward as we're sitting here, even if Lawrence comes back healthy and you're getting ready for AFC playoffs?
Ben, it was the top thing written down on my list was, don't you wish you had Brian Branch right around now? So, yeah, 100%. I'm still going to hold it against him. I probably will until they end up addressing, you know, cornerback or safety with a first-round pick or with a high-end free agent. But it's something that's got to be addressed, right? You look at all these elite defenses, they have a leader in every unit. And there's just not, at least to me, and, you know, statistically there might be a leader, but there's not a set leader in that secondary. You know, you've got a very, very solid pass rush with Josh Allen. You've got Walker. You've got an array of pass rushers. But once you start looking at that secondary, they're not terrible by any means, but
right,
they're relative. I don't want to label them average or anything, but they're just kind of in that middle sphere where, you know, they're good enough to absolutely be on the field, but they're not necessarily, you know, making the game-changing plays that you're looking for as a defensive coordinator or a head coach. So, you know, going out and getting one of those premier defenders in your secondary, I think for Jacksonville would be wildly beneficial. And, you know, that's not saying a whole lot, right? Oh, I think this team should go out and get a game-changing player in the secondary. Like, you could say that for all 32 teams. But right, in terms of, you know, the Jaguars actually competing in these in high-end games where, you know, it matters the most in the playoffs, you're probably going to need one of those high-end secondary guys, Ben.
Tends to stand out a little bit more, too, after Brian Branch's pick 6 yesterday off the bounce pass from the team they were playing yesterday, the Saints, from Derek Carr. So tends to stand out even more on a day like that. Simon, talk to us about the pass rush, man.
Yeah, you know, overall, Jacksonville has been okay again. Well, better than okay, pretty good against the pass. They do create a lot of turnovers. They have nice safety rotation. Like Ron said, though, they don't have that number one guy. And a lot of what they've been able to do on the back end is impressive because of their lack of the pass rush up front. Jake Browning, you know, when you have a backup quarterback come in, and I want to give him all his flowers. He was great today. He had plenty of time, throws for over 300 yards. The way you get to one of these backup quarterbacks, especially the ones that aren't the most mobile, is by applying pressure and getting after them and speeding things up. These guys don't have game action. And Jacksonville is just one of the worst teams in the league and getting pressures and getting sacks, or at least getting sacks. I think it was just last week I had the stats where they're like top 10 in pressures, but bottom five in sacks in the NFL. We saw it again tonight. Their only pressure, they're only getting to the quarterback, comes from Josh Allen, 1.5 sacks on the 2 sacks of the day. Browning took 3 sacks when he only played, what, 2.5 quarters against the Ravens 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Took 4 sacks against the Steelers last week, and then just 2 sacks against Jacksonville. You have athletic linebackers and Devin Lloyd and Foye Luakon. You have to be able to send pressure and get after the backup quarterback. Because he was just able to sit back there and run around and do whatever he wanted. Troy was chuckling at him for the Baker head juke. And he got to look like Baker tonight, where if you don't pressure him, you let him either sit in the pocket and have time to look around, or have enough room to get out on the move and get a little momentum and get a little juice behind him. Yeah, he could make a lot of good, accurate throws, and it helps when you have T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, and Ja'Marr Chase just went off, by the way. I mean, Brian Branch is not helping you on Ja'Marr Chase on the outside, going for 11, 141, and 1. But look at the, you know, to kind of flip. So that's my thing on Jacksonville. Yeah, they really need some help at the pass rush. That's going to be an offseason problem. I don't think that's anything they fix this week or this year, unless they take this Trevor Lawrence injury and say, similar to Cincinnati with the run game, they say, okay, how can we have our defense do something different to help if we have a backup quarterback? Okay, let's use these athletic linebackers and start sending some blitzes off the ball. Let's start sending, you know, we have all these athletic safeties. Let's start throwing some nickel blitzes out there to try and help generate a pass rush, help generate third and longs, more punts, better field position for the backup quarterback. I'd like to see that. To flip over to Jake Browning, though, real quick, look at his target distribution. I mean, this is what you want to do as a backup. You have an all-pro, number one, legit 1A wide receiver. Give him 12 targets. Just feed him. And then what else do you do? In the flats to your running back, 7 targets for Joe Mixon. Hit your slot receiver, 7 targets to Tyler Boyd. It's going to hurt for a guy like T. Higgins, who's that, you know, straight number two in this offense, deep ball guy, only 3 targets, but 3 catches for 36 yards. So they're going to be key and clutch when it happens. And then you got your tight end getting 4 targets too. So he's spreading the ball around, but he's looking for that number one guy. So when you're facing this Bengals team, it's got to be get pressure one. And then whether it's man-to-man or if you're playing zone, you've got to have a guy over top of that number one wide receiver, because that's how the backup quarterback is going to go. And then you just kind of hope that the running back and tight end slot receivers don't beat you underneath too bad. Ben?
Yeah, and I'm going to go back to the defense really quick, because I'm with you. I would like to – and listen, not all defensive coordinators are the same. Some of them just don't come out naturally. But I would love to see some more creativity to create some pressure, because I think they have a lot of nice pieces. I even like Trevon Walker, even though he's obviously not the, you know, the edge rusher they were hoping they were getting when they drafted him. Still, he's a nice piece. You mentioned Aluakun and Devin Lloyd. There are pieces there that are effective, and I love the body language. And yet still, if you could get a little more creative, kind of like the Kansas City Chiefs do with Steve Spagnuolo, just something here and there to mix it up. I do agree. I think that would help. Ronan, anything else on this game, man?
Yeah. I've got two more little points. One point, one question. The point, the Bengals need to take the wide receivers passing the football out of the playbook. Ja'Marr Chase, so 1 of 1 tonight for -7 yards, and Tyler Boyd, 0 for 1 with an interception straight to Josh Allen. Take it out of the playbook, Zach. It didn't work. It doesn't work. It's not worth trying again. Just go ahead. We learn now. And then the second one is an actual relative question. So 30 seconds were left, and the Jags roll out – Jags roll out the kicker. Clock was rolling, and the Bengals used the timeout. Right. So Jags didn't have a timeout. So Jags would have had to rush onto the field. Right. There was 30 seconds left. So it wouldn't have been a complete rush, but yeah, it wouldn't have been easy. McManus missed a kick earlier. So, that could be in his head. He's getting rushed out there. Would you have called that timeout to try and, it almost worked out for him. So, not holding it against him, but would you guys have called that timeout there with 30 seconds left to try and keep you a little bit of time, or are you letting it run and trying to have McManus maybe get in his head a little bit? Simon, I'll hit you first.
Yeah, I had that same thought at the beginning when it happened, and I was curious to hear what a guy like Aikman would say about it. And he was talking about, these teams practice this all the time. You're pretty confident that they can get out there and get set up. 30 seconds is a pretty long time to make that transition happen. But at the same time, it's coming off of a play where it's like Beathard got sacked, right, or tackled for like a 2 yard rush or whatever, right? So it's not even like it's on a, I don't know, a complete pass to a wide receiver who was like kind of on the move and can get to the ref. This was like away from it was all very herky jerky, but I think what you gotta have to think about is what would make you look worse in the end. And this isn't the way Zach Taylor is necessarily thinking, but for us to sit here and kind of analyze it, would we give Zach Taylor a harder time if he called that timeout, they go to overtime and they lose in overtime? Where it's the alternative is we're hoping that a veteran kicker under a veteran coach like Doug Peterson can't, get the snap right or make the field goal under time pressure, or they, don't call the or yeah, they don't call the timeout and then they accidentally send 12 men on the field themselves and pull a Buffalo Bills, right? And then just like really shoot themselves in the foot. So I'm with you. Like I had that same thought, but I thought Aikman's explanation of like there's so much time on this clock that it wouldn't have necessarily mattered made a good amount of sense. But I think you're not far off if you wanted to criticize for it. What do you think, Ben?
Me personally, I would have had them rush the field goal and I would not have called the timeout. Now, modern NFL, I know most coaches are thinking, save the time, let's see what we can do with it. So I get it. I mean, the defensive rules that allow the offensive players to do all kinds of things and move the ball quickly at the end of a game for a field goal chance. I like the aggressive mindset from Cincinnati there. I mean, I'm sorry, from Cincinnati there. But I still would have not called that timeout. Practicing is one thing, and they do it very well, and they're very efficient at it. But still, I love the idea of them knowing they have no choice but to get this field goal off, and it's got to be good. There's no more game after that if they don't make it. So I would have let them rush it, and they probably would have made it anyway. But I would have let them do it. So, all right, Simon, anything else in the game, man?
We're about to transition to injuries, but we should also just note Christian Kirk also left this game early. That first offensive play by the Jags, he had a 26, I think, yard catch, and he left the game with a groin injury. So whoever's playing quarterback for these next couple weeks is also going to have to maybe do it without their top slot receiver. But rookies, Parker Washington out of Penn State, what was he, day three UDFA guy? He had a nice game in this one. So be interesting to keep monitoring that, Ben.
Absolutely. Well, let's jump right into the injuries then. I'm going to list off three, and then Ronan. Actually, Simon, I'm going to let you start the injuries because the first two of the first teams are really teams that you're more familiar with, and then I'll switch them over to Ronan. Texans wide receiver Tank Dell ankle injury. The rookie, he is out for the season. Not necessarily the biggest weapon in the world, but has been extremely efficient and a huge part of what CJ Stroud loves to do there. Patriots running back Ramondre Stevenson, ankle injury. Steelers quarterback Kenny Pickett, also an ankle injury. Looks like at the moment he may be out a couple of weeks. Simon.
Yeah, I'll hit Ramondre and Kenny first. Kenny Pickett ended up getting surgery on that ankle, I believe today, Monday, the day we record this podcast. He is going to be out a couple weeks. I don't think they're putting him on IR, so apparently it's not super invasive of a surgery or anything, but we've said it before a number of times on this podcast, you go in for surgery, man, and anything could happen. So this is a tough look for the Steelers. They're rolling into a game on Thursday. Mitch Trubisky is going to be the starter. He had a tough day playing the Cardinals defense in relief duty for Pickett on Sunday. Some snap issues with Mason Cole, the center. That was mostly on Mason. I think that would have happened regardless of who was back there. But, you know, for the Steelers, man, this offense was trying to get itself going. It wasn't really working out against the Cardinals early on in this one, but it does not help when your starting quarterback goes out. So the Steelers will be playing the Patriots Thursday with a backup, and we will see how long that will be the case for. Meanwhile, the Patriots, who just got shut out by one of the worst defenses in the NFL, they officially had moved over to Bailey Zappe as the starting quarterback. They are going to be without their best offensive weapon more than likely on Thursday, and we'll see about beyond that. Ramondre Stevenson, but you know, that's kind of a, like, you throw your hands up and you're like, in the season from hell, like, what else can go on kind of deal. So both of our Thursday night teams are going to be dealing with some injuries, Ben, and we had a great primetime week this week. We had that great Thursday night game. We were all excited. Great Sunday night. Great. It's Patriots Steelers, man. Not looking off to a great start for the Stat Sheet Podcast week 14, Ben.
No, it's not. I don't think Patriots talk is too exciting to anybody right now, at least until the offseason gets here. So we'll keep an eye on that one. Stay tuned. Roland, so you can hit on any of those injuries. I'll list the next couple here. Saints quarterback Derek Carr, concussion and or ribs. I think it's both, right, for him. I think he's still kind of – he's had some stuff from early in the season, but has really been playing and then has had both of those again. Falcons cornerback A.J. Terrell, concussion as well. Ron.
Yeah, Derek Carr obviously hasn't had the ideal season this year in his first year in New Orleans. As he walked onto the field, I believe Taysom Hill took a snap at quarterback, maybe the first play of the drive or something. And then the next play, Derek Carr checks in and all of New Orleans boos. So it hasn't been necessarily the best year for Carr. Hopefully this isn't like a changing of the guard. The Saints haven't necessarily had that much success. They're 5-7 now after the loss to Detroit. That there's been a lot of people calling for Carr to ride the bench at least for a little bit and see what Jameis can bring to the table. Hopefully this isn't used as kind of against him. Well, he's injured. We'll send Jameis in, and it switched over like that. If there is a switch, it should be, you know, because Jameis is the better, you know, option at the time. But Carr, he always plays hurt, it seems. It seems like he plays through anything. So the timetable on his injuries aren't necessarily for sure. But I'm just not exactly sure, guys, how much more Derek Carr we're going to get to see this year, Ben.
Yeah, and I don't know either. It's not the first time this season has been booed, by the way. It hasn't been a good season. And, you know, while I don't totally blame him for all of it, you know, he didn't have to come to New Orleans. He chose to come there. You know, that's where he, you know, that's the place he wanted to be. They were offering him money, so there he is. You know, he needs to figure it out one way or another. And I don't care if they do put Jameis Winston in. I'm fine with that because Winston, you know, has a big enough arm, gives you a chance to win too. So. We'll again stay tuned on that. We'll see maybe more news on that coming during the off season. I do want to hit Tank Dell real quick because again, he is out for the year. I don't feel like Tank Dell is a top end, top flight elite receiver, but still, you talk about a rookie that has settled in very much there into the Houston lexicon and, you know, played at the University of Houston as well. So it's kind of a beautiful fit right there for him getting to play with CJ Stroud. Stroud was extremely comfortable with him and Nico Collins, kind of both of those wide receivers, just kind of back and forth. Yeah, I think he had like 47 catches, 700 yards, something like that on the season. I think 6-7 touchdowns, something like that. Really, really good productive season for a guy that didn't get a lot of attention in the draft this year. That people knew about him, but he, again, it's somewhere in the middle pack of the draft, the wide receivers. So this is just another one of those things, and most teams have it at this point in the season, where you're like, dadgum, it would have been nice to have that guy down the stretch. And now he's not there. And now we're kind of scratching and scraping, looking for another guy to throw the football to. I think they'll be okay, but okay may not be making the playoffs. It might just mean, hey, we had a nice showing and we go home at the end of the season, we regroup. But anyway, They will miss Tank Dell because he was fitting in very well there for Houston. All right, three more injuries to hit. Titans defensive tackle Jeffrey Simmons' knee looks like he may be out for a few weeks. That might mean the whole season. Simon, I'll let you comment on that because obviously Tennessee's losing and there aren't many weeks left in the season anyway. Packers wide receiver Christian Watson, hamstring. I'll have thoughts on that in a minute. And Commanders running back Brian Robinson, hamstring. Simon.
Yeah, it's a tough go for the Titans, man. They are just having, you talk about a year from hell. It's not going the way you want if you're the Titans. They are 22nd in defensive DVOA, 30th against the pass. They are second against the run, however, and Jeffrey Simmons is obviously a huge part of that. And man, if they, however long they got to go without him, it is definitely going to be a tough look. He's one of the still bright spots on this team, both offensively and defensively. But at this point, you might kind of be thinking they just fired their special teams coordinator. They've moved to the, you know, rookie quarterback. How, and by the way, on a side note, how tough is it that not only is Ryan Tannehill benched, but he's like holding the ball for the kicks? That's tough. That's tough stuff, man. Don't do that to the guy. That's insane. That's insane behavior. But yeah, no Jeffrey
He's
Simmons.
He's the best at it, apparently.
it's not good. But yeah, you're going to roll into a game against the Miami Dolphins and then the Houston Texans and then the Seattle Seahawks and then the Houston Texans and then the Jacksonville Jaguars without your bright spot on defense. I mean, do they lose out here, guys? Like, this is tough stuff. I don't like this. I don't like this if I'm Tennessee, or maybe I really like it. Four wins, you get a top 10 pick. I think there's what, maybe three receivers worth taking in the top 10 this year. I'm starting to get my draft hat on a little bit. I'll slow down. But yeah, tough stuff for Tennessee. Jeffrey Simmons, glad he got his bag. Really hope he's going to get at least close to being able to play again this season, whether he actually gets on the field or not. Hope for a good recovery because he's a fun player to watch, Ben.
I love Jeffrey Simmons. I really, and this isn't an insult to Tennessee. It's just kind of where they've been the past couple of years. If Simmons were playing on another hot, you know, team like the Cowboys or somebody that got on TV all the time on primetime, everybody in the country would know who Jeffrey Simmons is. Now, most people still know because he's so good. But everybody would know if he played for like the 49ers or the Eagles or the Cowboys or somebody like that, the Steelers even. You know, everybody would know who the heck this guy was because he is fantastic. You know, absolutely love Jeffrey Simmons. And no, I didn't mean to insult the Steelers when I said that.
It's not lost on me that he went in the draft the year that the Steelers traded up for Devin Bush, who is now a backup linebacker on the Seahawks. It's not lost on me. It's real tough stuff.
Every team's got their horror stories. Ronan, I'll let you jump in a sec. I do want to say the Packers wide receiver, Christian Watson, hamstringing again. I don't know how long it's going to be out, but again, hamstring can kind of linger, so it may be something he deals with the whole season. Jordan Love, who I'll talk about later, the Packers, who I'll talk about later at the end of the show when we do our final thing on the NFL. Jordan Love is really starting to hook up with Christian Watson, and we saw last year that Christian Watson really was the key to kind of the run that the Packers made picking up as Aaron Rodgers started getting a bad Packers offense on the roll. That connection was really starting to heat up again with Jordan Love. So without that, I think that is a big deal for Christian Watson for the Packers. Doesn't mean they can't keep winning. I just do think if he's not available, that is a big hit there for him because they have other receivers, but nobody's a difference maker like he is. He is a legit difference maker there at wide receiver. Ronan, anything else on any of these injuries, man?
Yeah, just to add on to the Watson injury, you're 100% right. He is a difference maker, but it's whenever he's on the field. This is his fifth hamstring injury in the past 3 years. And, you know, that's wildly unfortunate. And hopefully that's not something that continues down the line. But, you know, as you guys have noted, the hamstring injuries they're not fun. Those are tedious. You don't know what to expect. It could keep you out a week. It could keep you out 2 months. So hopefully he can kind of get that figured out. I'm sure there's a hamstring expert somewhere in the country that he can get in contact with, and hopefully they can get him right, because whenever he's on the field, Ben, you're not lying. He is a difference maker for that Packers offense. So anything to keep him out there on the field, guys.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that'll be a big deal. in the news, the Eagles have picked up another linebacker. There's a quarterback controversy brewing with the New York Jets. Who would have expected it? We'll talk about all that right after these advertisements from our sister podcasts.
Hey, I'm Connor.
I'm Billy.
And I'm Austin.
And we're the host of the Tricky Takes podcast presented by the Box Score Network.
We talk about all things sports ranging from golf, baseball, football, NBA, and all college sports.
Come give us a listen and make sure you follow us over on Twitter at Tricky Takes, and that's Tricky with two I's.
Hey everyone, I'm Ben Parker.
And I'm Robert Zinvier, and we are the Odds On Favorite, presented by Box Score Network.
Every week, we analyze NFL point spreads, over-unders, props, futures, and much more.
Follow us on Twitter at Odds On Favorite and listen on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere you get your podcasts.
What's up, everyone? I'm here to tell you about the Simon Shore Podcast. Every Thursday, I deep dive topics related to the NFL, pro hoops, pop culture, and more. Be sure to subscribe to the Simon Shore Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, welcome back in, and we do encourage all of you listening to please check out our sister podcast. We have a number of guys who put in a lot of work every week to bring you content from really all around the NFL and I think all angles of the NFL. So we encourage you to listen to them and stay with us throughout the offseason as well. We are already all anticipating stuff we're going to be talking about during the offseason, so we'll be loaded then as well. Ronan, the Eagles signed a new linebacker. Tell us about it.
They did. If you kept an eye on my tweets, which I'm sure everybody who's listening has, you'll remember back whenever Derek Barnett was released by the Eagles that I called the Eagles maniacs, and you were probably sitting there thinking to yourself, does Ronan really care about Derek Barnett and the status of, you know, where he's at that much? Not necessarily. No offense to Mr. Barnett, but they are maniacs. They went out, got the maniac, Shaq Leonard. He hasn't been on the field a whole lot this year, but in years prior, he has been a, you know, all-pro linebacker, leader of a defense. So even if he steps in there and he's just a coach with a helmet on, I think the Eagles can absolutely benefit from this. He brings, well, I'm not necessarily sure what he brings to the table this year because we haven't seen much of him. But, you know, looking at his past work, we know that he's a turnover machine, or he has been. And, you know, like I said, he's been a leader of the defense. So the Eagles just continue to bring in just high quality players who, you know, have history being good at football. So you got to give props once again to the Eagles for bringing in another very solid piece here as the season is nearing the end, Simon.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we saw them go get what Linval Joseph and I forget who the other defensive tackle was last year in the middle of the year. But, you know, they're bringing James Bradbury to start the year last year. They're bringing in Kevin Byard here at the trade deadline this year. It's not going to be all pro Shaq Leonard walking through that door. But if it's, hey, this guy can give you a reasonable matchup on Jake Ferguson in the NFC playoffs, right? And I'm only talking Jake Ferguson here. I'm not talking about Travis Kelce. I'm not talking about TJ Hockenson, although he might have to go cover TJ Hockenson. You know, just somebody, because we saw the middle of the field for the Eagles get torn up in that 49ers game. Just having another guy there with some instincts, some experience, because they continue to turn over this linebacker position, is definitely a good one. So we kind of anticipated that move last week. It was between the Cowboys and the Eagles, but we just wanted to follow up with everybody there. I want to go ahead and hit the biggest news of the week. It's really the only reason I logged on to the podcast this evening. And we have more quarterback controversy in New York, guys. I don't know if you've heard, but it seems that unexpectedly, Tim Boyle did not work out for the New York Jets. He was benched during their game this past week. in place for Trevor Siemian. Why Trevor Siemian wasn't always that next guy, I don't know. We won't. Well, I do know. We'll get into that later. And then it's since come out that, hey, Aaron Rodgers is thinking, you know, listen, guys, I could come back. I could. But based on the way things have gone the last couple of weeks, it's looking less likely I'm going to put myself out there. Just don't want to risk, you know, ruining all the great work I've done listening to dolphin noises and, you know, taking my medicinal herbs that I grow in my garden. And so the Jets are like, well, you know what we should do? We should go, you know, take a look at our hotshot, high draft pick quarterback and say, hey, man, listen, you did your job. You lost us a bunch of games. And now that Aaron Rodgers is officially out of here, you want to come play again? You want to lose us a few more games? How does that sound, buddy? And Zach Wilson said, no, I'm out of here. I hate all of you. Zach Wilson apparently does not want to play quarterback for the New York Jets the rest of the season, reportedly because he of injury concern. I mean, I get it. He bad pocket management, bad offensive line. Team's always losing, so he has to throw a lot. I'd be worried about getting hurt too. Aaron Rodgers has apparently reached out to him to try and get him to change his mind. My gosh, man. I mean, I don't know. I can't think of a team that has screwed up the quarterback position in one season more than the New York Jets have this season. And I'm even talking about all those Cleveland Brown years. This is abominable stuff. Ben, let me throw it to you first, man. How do you feel about all this?
I mean, it's a good thing that this isn't happening in a major media place, you know, where lots of reporters are going to ask lots of embarrassing questions every day.
We're low key,
like that,
patient,
you know?
Fan base, yeah, and patient media, exactly, who will totally understand that stuff like this happens all the time.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know what? Ultimately, my emotion is I really wish Aaron Rodgers would still come back. I know that there's really nothing to be gained from that. The playoffs are out, injury risk. But if he could come back and not risk, you're always going to risk re-injury, right? No matter, you know, that could be training camp, off-season, whatever. As long as it wouldn't be further injuring what was already, you know, worse than what he has now. I'd love to see him come back because it would just be such a kind of a boost of energy for all Jets people concerned everywhere heading into next offseason. If he just plays a couple of games and he looks decent out there, it would just be just such a burst of energy. That's really it. There's nothing else to be gained, really. I mean, there's no momentum from a win or two. It's just, hey, here's what we can do. And, you know, happy feelings heading into the offseason. But if Aaron's kind of saying, hey, I don't think I'm going to do it. I could. I don't think I'm going to. Now you start to question everything Aaron's done for the past several weeks. Was it just all for attention? Was it, I mean, you knew this team wasn't very good without you. So was that all just for attention? And then if it was, then I have a lot less respect for everything he did over the past few weeks when I've actually been liking what he's been doing over the past few weeks. But short of Aaron Rodgers coming back, this quarterback situation isn't getting any better. I wish they'd have signed Joe Flacco. I wish they'd have traded for Josh Dobbs for, you know, for half a season. I wish they'd have done something, and they didn't do anything. Apparently, who knows why? Maybe they thought Zach Wilson could actually turn the corner, or maybe they just didn't want to bring anybody else in or hurt Aaron's feelings in the process. Who knows? But they didn't, so it's messy. It's going to stay messy. I think it's going to end messy. I think the offseason's going to be messy. it's not going to be pretty. And you know, who knows what the fallout will be. Ron?
No, I completely agree with you. You know, the Wilson experiment didn't work. It's just been a roller coaster. To be fair, Sala did come out and hit the podium today and say, that never happened. Actually, I just got done talking to Zach, and he wants the ball. The guy wants the ball. He thinks he's the best quarterback to go out there and win us games. So, you know, it might be a little bit fabricated. It might be right on the head, and Saul is just trying to save his tail. It's just, as you guys have mentioned, just a crapshoot there in New York regarding the quarterback situation, Ben.
Yeah, Simon, I know you've got more, so hit us with it. We'll roundtable this again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think about the process and I'm trying to go back through here and remember everything that took place. I mean, well, Zach Wilson was the quarterback when they had lost two straight games to the Chargers and Raiders on the heels of winning three straight games, the Broncos game, the Eagles game, and the Giants game. And my whole thing at that point was, were they worried, even though he was playing poorly, he was actually keeping them two in games? Because, yeah, Aaron Rodgers was just never going to come back. It was just never going to happen. And I think you're right, Ben. I think at the beginning of the season, they were hoping that, hey, maybe Wilson can be good enough to lead us all the way through the season. And then when that clearly wasn't working and it was only going to be 50-50 and maybe he would keep him alive just enough that Rodgers would have to play, and then Rodgers was like, hey, man, I can't play. Let's put in Timmy B. And they go and lose the next three games. You know, the second half of the Bills game that Boyle comes in for, Miami, Atlanta. And then when everything's cleared enough, hey, we could put Wilson in, because if we go 2-3 in the next few games, like, it's not going to matter. It's not going to make a difference. I don't think Rodgers is going to play. And at this point, like, he shouldn't, because they're going to keep their first round pick. They only got 4 wins. Again, keep that pick as high as you can, buddy, and get yourself an offensive tackle, get yourself whatever. But this is all screwy. And whatever happens with Wilson the rest of the way, if he wants to play or he doesn't, I mean, I don't know if this guy, if you can keep him on the team beyond this year for everybody's just mental health. I don't know, man. It's tough go, Ben.
I think that's a great way to put it. And I think Zach Wilson might be a decent backup somewhere in the league, and, you know, just take a couple of years, sit on the bench somewhere, kind of recuperate. But for everybody's mental health, it's very energy sucking to see this guy go out there every week and not be able to score any points. I mean, it's just, and now that you've had kind of two unpleasant back-to-back years where last year he didn't handle it well. Now this year he's handled it pretty well, but now we're getting rumors that he doesn't want to go back in and play, whether it's true or not. The rumors are out there now. It's just like, well, maybe it's time to cut the cord. And I know why they don't want to, because that means giving up on an extremely high-profile draft pick. But I don't blame teams for drafting quarterbacks high or drafting them where they think they need to. You're not going to hit on all of them. So I don't blame the Jets front office, but now the Jets owner might. He might look at that and say, you guys are out, since, you know, your high-profile quarterback draft pick didn't work. You guys are out the door. I got somebody else to do it. So I don't know what pressure they're feeling there in the general manager's office, but I too think they should let Wilson go at the end of the season and just move on. For everybody's sake, I think it would be better, just better for everybody mentally. All right, Sunday Night Football. We had a fantastic game there as well. The Packers beat the Chiefs 27-19, a bit of a surprise. Ronan, tell us about it.
Yeah, so Jordan Love has been on a roll lately, gentlemen. In the past three games, his touchdown interception ratio is 8-0. In the last five, it's 11-2. So this might be him starting to settle in a little bit, which we might be watching history once more in Green Bay at the quarterback position. Just a guy step up. I guess I'll go ahead and be a franchise quarterback with pretty much no problem in transition, you know, going from Favre to Rodgers to possibly now Love. 25 of 36 for 267 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 of which went to Christian Watson, who we mentioned earlier. It was just another really, really good game from Love, picking up a huge win over a team who, you know, he went out there first start of his career against the Chiefs, didn't necessarily look great. I mean, you compare that body of work to this game. I mean, obviously they won, so it's going to look different, but I mean, it's a different quarterback there, Ben.
Yeah. And Simon, I'll let you take it over from here, but we all know the Chiefs have flaws. They have been obvious all season. They were obvious in this game. But I really don't feel like that's the focus of this game. I really do feel like it is what Ronan just said. Jordan Love has now, for the past 3, 4, 5 weeks, depending on how you want to divvy it up, he has played really well. The yardage is there. The touchdowns are there. The interceptions are basically not there. The points are there. I mean, all of that is there that needs to be. And most of importantly, the wins are there against Kansas City, against Detroit, against the Chargers, against the Rams. I mean, 4 out of 5. So everything that needs to be there is there. And without even jumping into next year or the next 3 years, it's there right now. And I think that's the biggest thing coming out of this Packers win.
Yeah, Love was great. The offense was great. I mean, overall, there I can't remember any really key or really obvious drops in this one, but any of the receivers, this offensive line was really good. I that was the first thing that stood out to me in this one. The offensive line gave Love plenty of time, and the way that the tackles would make their sets, and anytime that the interior did give up some pressure, and just Love in general with that time in the pocket, if you get that 2 point high end seconds, close to 3 seconds or 3 seconds plus in the pocket, you're not typically just getting that by standing still in the pocket too. He was maneuvering around the pocket beautifully based on what the O-line was giving him. So for the Chiefs front seven, who we've been talking about, and all the bat downs and all the pressure they've been generating, this good defense overall, for Love to have those stats that Ronan rattled off and to get the points and drive the ball the way you were talking about, Ben, and just be able to move within the pocket, that's great execution. And we've seen the Packers and Love, even in that dry spell in the middle of the season there, while make some mistakes, a lot of the process was still there and still correct. There wasn't a lot of panicking in the pocket on a consistent, like down to down, you know, series to series basis. There weren't a lot of complete misreads of defenses over and over again. There weren't a lot of same mistakes happening over and over. It was a young, we know the stat by now, by snap count, this is the youngest offense in the NFL. And we saw that. We saw them make mistakes, have drops, have interceptions, take sacks, stuff like that. Minnesota game and the Rams game, back-to-back weeks. And what was that? 10-29, 11-5. I can't count to see which weeks those were, but 2-4 sack games in a row. And since then, he's taken 6 sacks over the last 4 games, you know? So he was moving in the pocket well. He was utilizing that space well, moving through his progressions well. He's been doing that all season. I've just been really impressed with the process of the offense, even if the results haven't always been there, Ben.
Yeah, and Ronan, I feel like hats off to the Packers because they won this game. I mean, they just straight up won this game, no question about it. How do we feel about the Chiefs coming off this game? They're 8-4. We'll dive back into some in-game stuff, but they're now 8-4. I haven't looked since tonight's game ended, but they're either third or fourth in the AFC. They don't have a top two spot. They sure as heck don't have a top one spot. So how do we truly feel about them moving forward?
I'm still not too concerned about them in terms of, you know, thinking that they're going to kind of die off a little bit. I think it was just another one of those games where it was a tough loss. Now, obviously, you don't want to go out there and put up that same performance week in and week out because it wasn't necessarily the best. But, I mean, Green Bay, I believe they scored 3 of their first 4 drives of the game. So, I mean, offensively, the Chiefs were playing catch-up. Defensively, you know, they've played pretty good all season long. So the Packers scoring 3 of the first four drives, I think that's just more of a testament to how hot and rolling the Packers are, because, you know, the Chiefs don't necessarily give up points that easy. So, you know, I don't know how many more times this year teams are going to go out there and score 3 of the first 4 drives, touchdowns on this Chiefs team. And, you know, it's not like Mahomes had a terrible night. 21 of 33, 210 yards, a touchdown and a pick. The yards obviously aren't necessarily where you want them to be, but they also ran the ball pretty well, 25 times for $148, 5.9 a carry and a touchdown. Pacheco looked really good, 18 yards for 110 of those rushing yards and the touchdown. So, I mean, I've enjoyed whenever the Chiefs have started to rely on Pacheco a little bit more. Which, you know, this might bode well for them as they near the end of the season. I'm not too concerned about it yet, then.
Fair enough. Simon Ronan mentioned it. The Chiefs ran the ball very well. Pacheco himself, 18 for 110. The team overall, 25 for 148 and 5.9. I don't necessarily need to see Kansas City hand the ball off more than 25 times per game. Really, I think it's about right. But I still, the points aren't there, and this is now – this is several games this year that we've seen the offense muted, I think is a good way to put it. It's not the explosive offense. And honestly, I wouldn't care, except it is their fourth loss of the season.
Yeah, and you know, what stands out in this one is we've been talking about the receivers were pretty good in this one. They were making the catches when they needed to, and now there wasn't a downfield element, and I think a lot of this is the you know we've been talking about the Packers offense and how they won the game. This Packers defense was really good in this one. They've been fairly solid all season, but they were good in this game. They had three sacks on Patrick Mahomes in this one, which it was tied for a season high. Mahomes does not get sacked. He is so good at evading pressure, scrambling when he needs to, throwing the ball away. I mean, his sack to pressure ratio is like among the best in the NFL every single year, including this one. Mahomes was sacked three times in this one. Twice, it was on the final third down of the two first half field goal drives. So you're talking about trying to match those three scoring drives by the Packers, right? Packers go 13 plays, 75 yards, 8 minutes of game clock, and get that touchdown to start the game. The Chiefs almost matched that. 13 plays, 60 yards, 7 minutes of game time. Mahomes takes a sack. They have to kick a field goal. Next drive, Packers, 8 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. Next drive, Chiefs, 14 plays, 59 yards, 8 minutes again. Take another sack. You get two sacks in one half like that against the Chiefs when they're on touchdown scoring, you know, and you saved 8 points right there. I mean, that could have been a 14-14 game going into halftime, and then the Chiefs go on a little run there with the two touchdowns. They obviously have the interception late in the game. Getting those sacks were timely and important, and things that it's something that doesn't normally happen with the Chiefs. Now, you have enough of these things pile up through the year. Oh, this game it's drops. This game it's turnovers. This game it's Kelsey didn't show up. This game you don't run enough. This game things pile up like this, and that's how you know when the goal is to win a Super Bowl and that's the standard. That's how you don't win a Super Bowl, when you just have little things every single week. But in terms of taking this specific game, I think the issue, based on what we don't normally see from this team in wins or losses, is the Mahomes sack. So if those get cleaned up, they go back and look at the film and figure out why they gave up the three sacks in this one, I think they'll be all right. But again, hats off to the Packers, because they totally took the deep ball element out of this. I know we've poked fun at MVS in this game. But everything, you know, Rashee Rice had, what, the 8 catches, I think, for like 59 yards. Those were all screens and short plays. And then you had Travis Kelce find soft spots in the zone. But there's no real, I'm pushing the ball downfield to try to make something happen. And that's because the Packers' pass rush was working well and coverage was working well then.
Yeah, and I want to stress, because I am going to hit the Chiefs here again in a second, but I want to stress, I'm in love with what the Packers have done the past 3 weeks and four of the past five. Hats off to them, because remember, they traded away Rasul Douglas to the Bills. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure a lot of people think, well, Packers kind of checking it in on the season, giving up a little bit here. They're doing without David Bakhtiari now for many, many weeks for most of the season now. And yet here they are putting together a really nice winning series here. I will say for the Chiefs, and it's not just this game, it's the whole season we've seen it. I really had hoped during the offseason, I don't think I've even mentioned this since the season started, I hoped they would bring back Juju Smith-Schuster. I don't know why they didn't. It's money. You know, I get it. And I love what the Chiefs are doing overall in terms of being willing to redefine what they do as a team. But still, I think they have pushed the limits too far of how few receivers they can have and still be really, really good. I don't think they may still show up in the Super Bowl again this year, but they don't automatically at a glance look really, really good. And I think they need to next offseason, we'll talk about it all through the offseason, do something at wide receiver to tilt the balance back just a little bit. Nothing drastic, just something to help out, and not one of these, you know, kind of middling wide receivers that Mahomes has, you know, 10 of. He can get them anytime he wants them. Something else there to make a little bit more difference as well. Ronan, real quick, back to you. The Vikings 6-6, Packers 6-6, your Rams 6-6, Seattle 6-6. At the moment, the Falcons are 6-6, but they have the 4 seed because they're winning the division. So what that means is Vikings and Packers have the sixth and seventh spots right now. And the Packers schedule, give me just a second, I'm going to pull it back up here. The Packers have the Giants, the Buccaneers, the Panthers, the Vikings, the Bears. A very manageable schedule for a Green Bay team that, recency bias aside, looks pretty good. So if you had to look at those teams again, we did it last week, Seattle, Rams, Vikings, Packers, which two are in, which two are out?
I'd love to say the Rams, but you know, I think last week I did. I'm gonna say Seahawks still, and you know what? The Packers have shown me enough. They're kind of giving me the Jalen Hurts Eagles vibes the year before last, you know, where it's like they're kind of sneaky good and they're kind of starting to put it all together. The young quarterback's starting to see the field better. And you know, I'm thinking maybe next year is kind of where we see Jordan Love really go full force. Like, okay, this is for real. So go ahead and give me Green Bay and Seattle, please, Ben.
All right. And maybe it changes next week. It's been that kind of a season. So
100%.
We will see. Simon, last notes from the game, man.
Yeah, on the Chiefs side, I talked about Jordan Love kind of evading pressure, that Chiefs front seven not doing what we've seen them do. We didn't mention this in the injury section, but Drew Tranquil, I think, left the game, was in concussion protocol. I don't think he re-entered, and we could feel that. They normally are so good. You know, Spagnuolo, we talked about at the beginning of the show, with sending blitzes and sending these pressures. And I'd love to see the numbers. I haven't seen them yet on how much they were actually doing those things. They sent Willie Gay on a couple of those. But usually it's Nick Bolton will get in for a couple. Drew Tranquil's been doing it this season with Bolton out. They just didn't have that element to the game in this one. I wrote down this guy's name, and I forgot it. That shows where they're at. Jack Cochran played 57 of his 92 snaps of the season in this game once Tranquil was out. Playing over Leo Chenal, that's interesting. I don't know what's up with that. I don't know if Cochran's maybe just better in pass coverage as a true inside linebacker. Chenal kind of more of a Sam linebacker. I don't know. But just found that interesting. And if the Chiefs don't have that element where they have a smart, fast off-ball linebacker other than Willie Gay that they can mix match with him doing these blitzes, I wonder how that could affect them. So we'll see if Tranquil plays next week. Probably not if he actually sustained the concussion. And we'll see what they continue to do moving forward, Ben.
It's actually a great point and one that's easy to get lost in the shuffle, because even if you have, let's say, a middling Chiefs offense, but the defense is exceptionally good, you feel pretty good about your chances to get in the Super Bowl again. But if that defense starts taking hits, and you mentioned it, Bolton going down earlier in the year, you're like, okay, that's one injury, we can handle it. But when that second one hits at the same position, when Tranquil is not available, now all of a sudden you see that huge drop-off. You have guys who really should be playing, you know, kind of 20 snaps a game. They're playing 40 and 50. You have guys who really should just be kind of situational guys. Now all of a sudden they're out there for all three downs. And everything changes. And so, again, something to keep an eye on moving forward there for Kansas City. Well, that's two of the fun games we had this week, but we had a third one on primetime. And we haven't had many weeks this year where all three games on primetime were fantastic. Thursday night football, the Cowboys beat the Seahawks 41-35. We could spend a whole hour just on this one game. We won't do it, but let's get started on it, Simon.
I mean, my goodness, man, what a just incredible game. And obviously, we have to talk about something that's not as fun to talk about to start, and that's the penalties. And this isn't even a, man, the refs threw too many flags. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't know. It all netted out pretty even at the end when you look at the numbers. But it felt like both defenses showed up, and they were like, hey, instead of playing defense, you want to just, like, fight the offenses and see whose offense is tougher. Like, they had a little deal on the side or something. No Spygate here or anything. But per Jordan DeJohnny of CBS, the combined 19 penalties for 257 yards are both season highs on the season in the NFL. The average per game for first downs caused by penalties in a game is about 4. Every team averages about 2 first downs that they allow per penalty. Or because of penalty. There were 11 total in this game. 6 on one side, 5 on the other. And again, these penalties were pretty even. I mean, it was like 10 to 9 in total penalties, and I think like 130 to 127. So I don't think there was anything weird about one side versus the other. This was a very chippy game. And I think the refs let it get out of hand in a lot of ways. I want to talk about the taunting penalties or lack thereof, because we've seen these taunting penalties all season long, right? For the silliest things, like guys looking at a guy after he makes a catch, or guy, you know, waves at a guy for, you know, making a play on him. And I get it. They want to, the taunting can lead to aggressiveness and chippiness and then fights and violent behavior. And yeah, that stuff's not good. But most of the time when we see taunts, like, it's just friendly trash talk. Like, it's not a big deal. And then we get a 15-yard penalty for it. Where was it in this game, man? We had dudes throwing people into the sideline and standing over them. We had Quandre Diggs helmet to helmet hit Jake Ferguson there in the, I think the second, towards the end of the second quarter, and stand over him. And then as soon as Ferguson stands up, Jamal Adams runs up and headbutts him and like slaps him and gets in his face. No taunting penalties, just nothing. And this game was chippy all the way through. And it's probably why we have 11 penalties here for all these yards. And it's because these guys were allowed to go crazy. And now look, it was a fun game. It was really exciting. But that's the first thing that stands out to me, Ben. Just a weirdly, we ignore the taunting thing, but we were all over all the other physical stuff of the game. It was interesting.
Takes away from the fun of it. And really, in a game that has this many points, and two pretty good teams. I know Seattle's kind of fading, but still got a very good chance to make the playoffs there. On a primetime game, it just takes away from the fun for everybody. And listen, I know the refs don't plan, let's say, hey, let's ruin this, you know, primetime game with a bunch of flags. But still, you mentioned that flurry of flags there at the end of the first half, and then some of the non-calls and some of the taunting stuff when we've seen it called in other places throughout the year. It really does take. Ronan, what you got?
You know, I think it's kind of interesting, right? There were 19, I believe, penalties, like you guys mentioned, for the 200 some odd yards. Both teams still put up 400 total yards offensively. So, you know, we're looking at, what, a 1,000-yard game here, 800 between the two teams, 200 to the refs. Offensively, it was a shootout, guys. Dak Prescott making a case, I guess, for MVP. We aren't necessarily the biggest of fans of Dak Prescott here on the show.
Oh, whoa. You keep my name out your mouth. I don't know what you're talking about. This is okay. This is a pro Dak Prescott studio, whatever letter I got from Ben at the beginning of the show this week. I will defend Dak somehow with a stick or something. I don't know how I fell into this island, but here I am.
I'm not sure how you did either. I'm not necessarily one that falls into that camp, but it's hard to refute it whenever he's putting up 29 of 41 for 299 yards and 3 touchdowns. You know, I believe he's second in MVP voting right now, behind Brock Purdy. So I don't know. But Dak looked really good, as did the running game in Dallas. 34 carries, 136 yards, 1 touchdown by Pollard. CeeDee Lamb showed out, 12 receptions for 116 yards and a touchdown. And then on the flip side, DK Metcalf, guys, good lordy. 6 receptions for 134 and 3 touchdowns on 8 targets. The stars scored, and I guess DK is a huge star because he did it 3 times with the hat trick, Ben.
Yeah, I love DK Metcalf. And again, I'm not trying to insult Seattle here because I love Seattle, but I think if DK played on the East Coast somewhere or for a team that gets even more primetime games than what Seattle gets, I think DK might be getting more attention every year for everything because he is – a monster and a beast and does it pretty consistently. I mean, I love DK Metcalf, so tremendous game. Simon, I'm going to hit you up with something and you take it in any direction you want. I don't change my feelings on the Cowboys or Seattle coming off of this game. I mean, Dallas won against a winning team, so hats off to them for doing that. But on the flip side, they were expected to win by a lot. They were at home. You know, I don't feel up or down on Dallas coming out of this week any more than I did heading into the week. And same for Seattle. You know, this is a tough game. I don't know how they really could be expected to win, but they needed to win. So, you know, fantastic game, though.
Yeah, I mean, first off, like, the most important thing is they gave us a fun Thursday night game. So thank you to those two teams for doing right by all of us. That's the most important part of every season, how we feel.
That's right.
So shout out to them. But you're right, Ben. I think you can read whatever you want from this game, no matter on what side of the coin you are. So if you're on the side of Dallas hasn't beaten anybody and Seattle was always overrated by the football nerds on Twitter, then like you could still feel the same way because you're like, hey, Seattle was never that good. They're 500 and Dallas still hasn't beaten anybody over 500 or whatever. Or you can be on the side of, hey, I think Dallas is good and I think Seattle is good. And you're like, man, this was a great game. And that's where I fall. And like Dallas beat a team that's a little bit better than the teams they've played. And I think that showed in the points that they allowed, because I think this is how you beat Dallas. You attack that secondary, right? The secondary is banged up. Deron Bland, they went right at him with DK and said, our guy's just bigger than your guy. So, and right. Now listen, if you don't have Geno, who's just going to rip that ball with confidence, that's where Deron Bland gets five pick sixes on those plays, right? There's not many quarterbacks in the league that are going to let it rip the way Geno does. And there's not many wide receivers in the league with the profile of DK to handle that. Now, we haven't seen DK obviously do it to this extent and do it with some of the precision that he snagged some of those balls, because some of those were like contested catches over Bland's ear hole of his helmet, right? And just like freaking darts, man. Those two guys, Geno and Dak, were just dealing. You guys saw the play in, I wrote down the exact timestamp here. Dak's first and 10 play in the fourth quarter, where they're driving down. He breaks the sack. He's got, I think, Frank Clark just all over him, and he just rolls out. He rolls him right off his back down the sideline, hits Ferguson on the sideline for a first down. Just like these two quarterbacks were just dealing. It was so much fun. But I think you can, to your question, Ben, I think you could see whatever you want from this game. And I guess that's the beauty of it. You should feel a little encouraged as Seattle, like, okay, we're still good, right? Because we went up against a good team, went toe to toe. Yes, it's not the result you want, and moral victories at this point of the season don't do you anything. But they're still in the mix for the wild card spot, and they went toe to toe with I think a Super Bowl contending team. So they should feel like, hey, we still have a chance going down here at the end of the season to get into the playoffs. And then once that happens, when you've got a Geno Smith and you can be in shootouts, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I think I'm closer to where you are. That is, Dallas is a good team and Seattle is a pretty good team than I would anything else coming off of this game. And I do feel good. I think Pete Carroll is as good as anybody at not letting bad momentum build up from one week to the next. It's kind of okay. He's very good at just kind of rinsing last week off and moving on with new energy. There are other guys who do it too, but he is one of the best at doing that as well. So even though Seattle's not playing great over the past several weeks in terms of wins, that Rams loss was a brutal loss a few weeks ago. Still, you feel good about their chances to keep on getting a chance here at the playoffs over the last five weeks. I did like these two teams have played several good games over the past few years, Ronan. I think over the past three seasons, they've probably played three or four times, and every matchup has been good. They just produce good football games where they match up against. And I even like the possessions in the first half and most of the second half were nice block possessions. You got 14 plays, 63 yards, 75 yards, 75 yards, 51 yards, 68 yards, 75 yards, another 62-yard drive, a 75-yard drive. Same thing in the second half. We don't see much of that in the NFL this year. It's kind of either the teams go all the way down and don't score, or they just go three and out. But these teams are putting together long, chunky drives consistently the entire game. Kind of an unusual game, but a very fun way to watch football. So I really enjoyed that. Anything else you got from the game, Ronan?
You know, just to kind of carry on about Seattle, Ben, I thought that was a really good point on how, you know, they don't necessarily let the loss from last week staying next or this coming week, right? So they're 0-3 in their past three, but you know what? They're still right there in the playoff contention. I think, you know, Kenneth Walker has been a guy that they've missed pretty dearly. He should be coming back this week. You know, against the Cowboys, they rushed it 22 times for 72 yards. So it wasn't terrible. It's not like it was the Chargers this past weekend, but it was for 3.3 clip. So that's something that you can definitely improve on. And I think with Kenneth Walker back there, hopefully healthy, we might be able to see that offense be a little bit even more multidimensional because, you know, let's say Kenneth Walker was back there for this game. It makes you wonder, you know, what would have happened against Dallas. Not to create a what if and, you know, try to paint some narrative against Dallas, but, you know, the Seahawks offense at the very least is pretty deadly. And when fully healthy, it's a tough one to keep up with, Ben.
Yeah, that's a great point about having Kenneth Walker in there because he and Zach Charbonnet do form a pretty good 1-2 punch. But Walker gives you that big touchdown dimension. And so that's just another thing that defenses have to deal with. Simon, final thoughts on this game? You may still have several, but go ahead and lay them out for us.
Yeah, I've just got a little segment here, a little mini segment. Don't do that. I've got one for each team. Nice. We had a Mike McCarthy moment in this game, everybody. It happened. Now, it happened on a touchdown play, so we probably didn't catch it. I only saw it watching the game back a second time. That CeeDee Lamb touchdown that he had where they motioned him from the left side to the right side and then he got a good little one-on-one, they motioned him out of being covered by Jamal Adams into being covered by Devon Witherspoon. Don't do that. Just don't do that. Look at the defense. Come on, Dak. Look at the defense. See you got Jamal Adams on CeeDee Lamb and say – go full on NBA clear out, right? Hey, everybody else, you get over here. We're going to go one-on-one over there. We're going to bust that guy up. So don't do that. In the NBA, this is like when guys are so obsessed with trying to switch on the picks and get a matchup they like, and they accidentally switch into like an all defensive player. It's like, just stop it. Just play. So don't do that. And then next, for the Seahawks side, I had one as well. They were doing a little three-man rotation with the right side of their offensive line. Don't do that. I hate that. I hate it when it's the two tackles because it's two young tackles and it's like both guys deserve it, so we're gonna let them both play. That doesn't help anybody. That's not a good look. They took it a step further and they were like, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna have Abraham Lucas start at right tackle. We're gonna have some other dude, I don't even know who he is, start at right guard. And then Jason Peters, you're going to rotate in first at tackle, and then we'll slide you to guard. So Lucas came back. Don't do that. Don't put your best five out there. If you really feel like you need to get the sixth guy an opportunity, run some tackle eligibles or let him play fullback. I don't know what to tell you. Don't. No more three-man rotation. Oh, and by the way, Jake Ferguson, I mentioned how he got hit in the head by Quandre Diggs and just bullied on that drive. He got his back, man. He had big, big boy stuff against who else? Jamal Adams for that touchdown. Just like, oof, love it, man. It was great. Great to see. Good game.
I am 100% with you on that offensive line, man. I love rotations on the defensive line, linebacker, defensive backs, running backs, wide receivers, you name it. Not on the offensive line. The communication is too important. It just is. These guys have to have a feel for what the guy beside them is going to do. I hate the musical chairs thing, but this is even taking it a step further. You mentioned it's some kind of a three-man rotation on the right side. I didn't even catch it, so it's a good catch by you there. I hate that. I absolutely despise that. And like you said, if you feel like the sixth guy needs to get in there, go big. You know, go big and create some size match, some size problems. I love that. But yeah, these guys need to communicate too much to be doing any of that. So all right, that's the Cowboys over the Seahawks, 41-35. That's it for our games. We've got some burning questions this week. That I'm bringing in, three different ones of them. Let's go ahead and hit the first one. What coach, I'm going to ask all of you, and then I'll chime in too, what coach or general manager should be let go if their team misses the playoffs? So that's the first burning question for the week. Ronan, I'll let you answer it first. Which coach or general manager should be let go if their team just misses the playoffs?
This seems pretty cut and dry to me. I've been calling for it since I played last season, whenever Sean Payton was in the mix. Brandon Staley. I loved him as a defensive coordinator for the Rams. I was, you know, the first one to, you know, support, you know, the Chargers hiring him. Actually, maybe not necessarily, because I didn't quite understand why they went with a defensive head coach and they just brought in Justin Herbert. Well, not just brought in, but you get it. They've just underperformed. He's a defensive coordinator, or former defensive coordinator, defensive-minded head coach, and they consistently have one of the worst defenses in the league. They have, a pretty solid running back in Austin Eckler, and they just cannot move the ball on the ground whatsoever. And then you look at their decisions in the wide receiver room. They've got a carbon copy of the same guy three times and just a jump ball receiver. So just a lot of different questionable decisions made under Staley's tenure. So that would have to be my pick, Ben.
Fair enough, Simon.
Yeah, so I have a lot, guys. I also had Brandon Staley, but I put Tom Telesco in here, the GM for the Chargers, too, because though, like Ronan was saying, those personnel decisions have not worked out at all. Giving, and this is on both of them, but all the money to that defense, and they're the worst defense in the NFL. I think they're like the highest spending by cash each year on defense, which is just bonkers. Should be no surprise based on my earlier part, but Joe Douglas and Robert Saleh for the Jets. I think we can. I don't think Aaron Rodgers necessarily writes off on it, but I think those guys, just like the way they've handled this season in that situation, I'm good with that one being done. And then Martin Mayhew and Ron Rivera for the Commanders. The Commanders are ready to clear house, I think, and I think this is the year that they do that from the front office and coaching standpoint, so I could see that. And then two coaches I have without the GM counterparts. Matt Eberflus of Chicago. Obviously, playoffs or bust isn't going to be his make or break, but coming out of their bye week, what they do with their offense, what they do with their game planning, how the defense looks, all of that. I think even after year two, he could and should be on the hot seat. And then Dennis Allen. We've talked about the struggles with the Saints. I think that's one where it'd be pretty easy if they missed the playoffs to say, okay, we gave Derek Carr all this money. It was super disappointing. We have to go in a new direction. He was the holdover from Sean Payton. Hey, you kind of kept it afloat for a couple of years, but we need to build this thing around Derek Carr moving forward. So those were all mine. I didn't do their GMs just because that Saints GM, I think whatever money laundering he's putting together, he's at the center of it and probably has some secrets he's hiding. I don't know, but I think he's safe. And I think Ryan Poles for the Bears, he's been aggressive enough. I think he has a bit of a longer leash to go get another coach one and another quarterback one more time if he wants.
Yeah, the two I strongly that you just mentioned, I'm not introducing any more new names to the conversation. Ronan, Staley for sure. I'm not convinced that Staley can't be a good head coach in this league. I think he probably should get another chance here in a few years, not right away, but some point in time. And it has nothing to do with his analytic decisions. It's just down to the fact that they aren't winning. I mean, that's all it is. You know, I don't care if he's analytically aggressive or not, if he's winning, but he's not winning. He hasn't, you know, aside from that, you know, what was the 8 or 9 game win streak last year. I mean, it's been extremely disappointing. Is there's no other way to put it. And at times they just look lost. I mean, there are times where they look like this year, like they don't have an identity. They don't know what they want to do. The offense was terrible this week against the hapless Patriots. I mean, the offense should never be that bad for the Chargers. With the people they got, it just should never be that bad. And the defense shouldn't be that bad. So, again, it has nothing to do with anything but winning. If he was winning, you know, I'd leave him, you know, no matter how much I like his decisions, whether I liked him or not. And then, Simon, you mentioned the other one. That's Dennis Allen. I don't like letting coaches go after two seasons. But this is Dennis Allen's second chance as a head coach. He already had a bit of a chance before. And so anytime you've got your second chance, you need to make the most of it right away. And while I don't really necessarily – I wouldn't have done what the Saints have done from a GM standpoint and throw all this money, you know, and this weird kind of a cap structure that they've got there. it's a team that should be winning. And it was a schedule that was very easy. And not only had the Saints not taken advantage of it, but they just looked bad. I mean, the offense looks dreadful. And the defense, while it's playing pretty well at times, the defense just hasn't been enough to get them wins. And so here in a really weak division, they're just looking weak. And you know, so all of that put together, I would be inclined to let Dennis Allen go at the end of the season if he can't get this put back together. So that's where I would be at on that. Any more thoughts on the coaches here or the GMs? All right, well, let's move on to our second burning question of the week, Ben's Barbecue. What coach would you be after to coach your team if you already knew that you needed a new one? So, Simon, I'll let you go first, and you feel free to do it generically, like, hey, I just like this guy, period, or, hey, here's a specific team I have in mind, and here's a guy that they should definitely go after.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's no surprise. I think we all probably have the same name. Ben Johnson is going to be probably the number one guy on the market this season. Go get the forward-thinking, offensive-minded guy. Everyone's going to want the next Shanahan, McVay, McDaniels, you know, go get that guy, right? So I think he's definitely going to be the hottest name on the market. I went away. I didn't quite expect for me to go with my secondary. I wanted to pick another one just to have a backup here. And it's Mike McDonald, the Ravens defensive coordinator. I'm not usually a proponent of the defensive coordinator being my head coach, right? We talk about Staley, although he's not doesn't have the same like traditional issues that a defensive coordinator does. And it's because of that. McDonald's still young. He's coming from the college game. He's kind of this like young, hotshot, new coach coming up, right? He does so many different things with his game planning, very Lou Anarumo like. And the way he's taken this Ravens defense with the lack of talent to start the season and the injuries that they've sustained throughout the season, what they did last year, the overall of the scheme from Wink Martindale to this, I'm just really impressed by it. And I'd be really, really interested to see what he had in mind for like an organizational philosophy and how he would see offense and how he would see game management, how he would see team building. So that would be my second one. Just in both cases, though, it's the same through line. Just give me like the young up-and-comer that can bring some fresh ideas, because I think whether you're offensive-minded or defensive-minded, that's the blood that I want running through the veins of my team, right? Just like new ideas, whatever it is, because you're going to have it for both sides of the ball, whatever side you come from, if you're showing that you're forward-thinking. So those were my two, Ben Johnson and Mike McDonald. What about you, Ronan?
I love those two selections, and I completely agree. I think Ben Johnson is going to be that top candidate for pretty much every team, and I do hope he ends up taking one of those head coaching gigs just to see what he can do elsewhere, because there are a lot of young quarterbacks that need his help, and it'd be fun to see if he can get them right. For me personally, I actually strayed away from the young gun hot shots. And I went for some veteran coaches, one of which is a college coach, been in the mix a little bit, actually the past year or two, and Jim Harbaugh. He's obviously coached in the NFL before. There are, I'm sure, many different ties that, he could end up going to. I'm sure he has ties all throughout the league at this point. Chicago would definitely be at the top of my list. I know you guys have seen that scenario, that conspiracy of, Harbaugh going to Chicago with the number one pick, getting his quarterback, and going from there. That would be an interesting one. A guy that you just mentioned, Simon, Lou Anarumo, they're the DC in Cincinnati. I think he's still due. I think he definitely could have gotten a job last cycle. So, would love to see him get a shot. And then, Eric Bieniemy, not necessarily, maybe not as hot of a name as he was 2 or 3 years ago whenever he was the OC in KC. And, just kind of everybody was just learning his name. But, I mean, he was sent to Washington. He did the trial by fire. He's got a quarterback that holds on to the ball forever who doesn't have an offensive line. And he's still, top 10, top 5 in passing yards. So I mean, that offense, all things considered, is kind of working, and I don't think that it's something that you can use against Bienemy. I don't know what people were expecting. I don't think people were expecting a top five offense with limited turnovers and, you know, 12 plus wins on the season, all because Bienemy walked in there. But I think with what he's shown, I think that's enough to, you know, warrant at least a consideration to be a head coach. So Harbaugh, Anarumo, and Bienemy are my three, Ben.
Yeah, I actually like everything that you're putting out there. And again, sometimes when it comes to coaches, we don't all see it the same, but I like everything you're putting out there. I'm going to double down on some names that you guys just mentioned. Again, I'm not going to bring any new ones in. First of all, for me, Ben Johnson is the number one choice. Watching what he's done there the past 2 years with the Detroit Lions, it has literally changed the franchise there. There's no question about it with the work that he's done. Now, can he do that as a head coach? We'll only know when he gets a chance. You know, sometimes the coordinators just can't hack it as a coach, but he looks like a guy that everybody will be looking at. I would love to see him go to the Raiders or the Commanders. Would really be my two spots. I'd love to see those two franchises really aggressively go after Ben Johnson and get a shot there. Eric Bieniemy is a name I love, and I know it's easy to say, well, why not Bieniemy with the Commanders? But Simon mentioned it. I think the Commanders are getting ready to clean house. I think they did it with the ownership, obviously, and I think they're pretty much feeling like, hey, it's time to clean everything out here. We took a year to get new ownership settled in, and now it's time to clean house. So I don't think we see Eric Bieniemy with the Commanders. I would like to see him go down to Carolina, and I think that's a spot that would be good for Bryce Young to have Eric Bieniemy coming in. Love Eric Bieniemy because we all had the question, how good was Bieniemy because of Patrick Mahomes? Well, he shows up over in Washington, and Ronan, you mentioned it, the offense is up in spite of a crappy offensive line. It's a horrible offensive line and a quarterback that throws for yardage but still seems to have some flaws. Love what Bieniemy can do. I would like to see him get his chance there in Carolina. And then Jim Harbaugh, you mentioned it. Harbaugh does three things. We know him for physicality. We know that. He's going to have an extremely physical team no matter where he goes. We know that he's usually going to win, which is pretty important. He's won everywhere. But the guy won at Stanford, for crying out loud. And cheating accusations notwithstanding, he won at Michigan, and he won with the 49ers. So you pretty much think he probably win wherever he goes. But also he develops quarterbacks. Everywhere he's been, his quarterbacks have gotten better, not worse, which is kind of unusual for a guy that likes physical play. So I like Jim Harbaugh, not for everywhere. I wouldn't want the Raiders to go after him. They've just had too much drama and craziness over the past few years. They don't need to have Harbaugh come in because he kind of brings the traveling roadshow with him. But I would like him in Chicago, and I know they've had their drama too, but still, I like him there in Chicago. I think that would be a great fit. I like him in Carolina too. I think the physicality there in Carolina and the quarterback development there in Carolina would be good for Harbaugh. There's other places too, and I won't talk about them tonight, but those again are my top names as well, the ones that you guys all brought up. Anything else there on the coaches there? All right, well, let's move on to the last part. Well, we've got two more parts really quickly. Who or what, question number three, would you throw a penalty flag at from this past weekend? So penalty flags on our show can be handed out for any reason, doing something stupid, doing something harmful to you and your team. You can throw penalty flags on fans, penalty flags on players, coaches, general managers, stadiums, stadium turf, networks, you name it. It is all fair game for you to throw a penalty flag at something or somebody. Ronan? Go ahead and hit us up with the flag here.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys ended up seeing it at some point on Sunday. Alvin Kamara got the ball, got out of bounds, went right into a sideline worker's leg. I believe it was a dislocated kneecap and like a fractured fibula. Absolutely brutal. Praying for a speedy recovery for him. But Alvin Kamara just kind of like sat there and looked at him. And granted, I mean, what else are you really supposed to do? I understand that. But sitting there and looking at the guy who you did that to, writhing in pain, and you just kind of like sit and stare and then carry on, definitely could have been handled better. Definitely didn't look good. It just on Kamara in general, definitely not going to help his public image. But that gonna have to throw the flag out there on that one, Ben.
Yeah, I saw that one live as well. You could see his leg on the original hit. It didn't look quite right, but some of their injuries, the network, I don't think would go back to it, because I never saw them go back to it. It looked really bad, so they didn't go back to it. But yeah, I'm with you on that one. Simon, throw a flag at somebody, man.
The Philadelphia Eagles, man, listen, I don't blame the guy himself, and there's some funny theories behind the whole thing, but the Dre Greenlaw, Dom DeSandro fiasco that happened Sunday or late afternoon, early evening, team personnel should not be mixing it up with players on the sideline. I mean, I think I have a whole nother thing about just like how we deal with players going into the sideline, especially on the opposing benches already. It's already a big enough issue. Dom DeSandro is like this, like I bet totally an awesome person. He's this like beloved Philadelphia figure. He's got this merch associated with like their autism, you know, community service drive they're doing. I bet he's a fantastic person. What is your security official doing not only on the bench, but like on the field side of the bench? Shouldn't he be like watching the stands, like making sure no fans are running out there? Referees are the people in charge of the players on the field. You don't need your security guy doing anything like that. Because what are you going to do every time he gets tackled? Throw your security guy out there to rough somebody up like that? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't track. And look, obviously this is the first time we've seen this kind of thing happen. But like this isn't where this guy should be. Get him away from the sideline. Get him off the field in general. If you need security, that's what like actual secure, like there's police officers and security there at the event. Your team security, what does that even mean, first of all? And second of all, like, doesn't need to be there. Now, let's get into the fun conspiracy theory of it, because we all know the Italian flags on the hats, Sirianni, Philadelphia. Dom DeSandro's like official title on the website is like assistant to the general manager and team security. Come on, guys. Come on. What are we? We know. We're online. We know how we feel about this. This is, he's not doing anything football related. I'll leave it at that. Yeah, we'll leave it there. Ben?
See, I'm with you on, and I'll even take it a step further on, what is this guy doing here? And again, I don't mean to attack him personally, Dom, the security guy.
Yeah, don't blame him.
Yeah, but I am actually going to blame him in this situation, because he himself, he's not a stranger to these games. Mm-hmm. Like, I do blame the team for allowing him to be there. I blame them first. But he's not a stranger to the NFL and how it works. You don't put your – and he actually reached out and put his hand on Dre Greenlaw. Mm-hmm. And you know not to do that. You just know not to. Listen, Greenlaw shouldn't have body slammed Smith. We all get it. He got a flag for it. You know, Greenlaw was first. But you're not a part of the team. You are part of stadium personnel, however you want to describe that. You are not an active coach. You know, I get it if a coach lays a hand on a player. I don't like that, but I get it. All right, you're an active participant in the game as a coach. So, but Dom is not. The security guy is not. Stay away from the players. Leave the players alone. I really don't even think he should have been close enough to pick up his own player. I don't even think he should have been involved in that extent. You know, that's what the coaches are there for. That's what the medical staff is there for. But you can see him, even as the play is developing, he's basically running along the sideline, waving his hand as if he's the coach cheering on the player, and then the player gets body slammed, and he's just right in the middle of it. He's not a rookie here. He's not a kid. He knows he should not be this involved. And I would be totally ticked off if I was Kyle Shanahan, which he was, or Dre Greenlaw, mm-hmm. which he was. If I've got somebody that I may not even know who the heck they are coming in and getting involved and getting in my face. It's not a referee. It's not a coach from the other team. It's not a player. I would have been completely ticked off. I was ticked off for them. So, you know, that's my stance on it. So I'm going to throw a flag at the New Orleans Saints. Okay, so we've done a lot of Saints bashing in this podcast here, but I'm going to throw a flag at them for the way they started the Detroit Lions game. Listen, I didn't expect New Orleans to win this game, and I didn't expect Detroit to lose it. But the way New Orleans started this game Sunday against the Lions was just really pathetic. They had the touchdown by the Detroit Lions to start, which that's fine. You know, they put together a good drive. New Orleans immediately goes back out, and Derek Carr bounces a pass. It wasn't Carr's fault in this situation. Bounces a pass off the receiver's hands, goes straight to the Lions for an immediate pick six. And then the Saints basically do a three and out. And then the Lions go right back down and score a touchdown again. It's 21-0. Now, hats off to the Saints for climbing back into this game. It was just too big of a hole. And you could see an energy level difference. You could see what felt like a focus difference. I mean, this did not look like a Saints team that was fighting for a playoff spot. This didn't look like a Saints team that was ready to just make a run. They looked flat. They're at home. They got the Lions coming in. And they looked flat. They looked unfocused. They didn't look like they had any energy. And they looked a mess. And so penalty flag on them for showing up that way. You have to start better. I mean, you're an NFL team with playoff expectations. And it was just – it was a really bad way to start the game. So penalty flag on the Saints for that. All right, time for last thing around the NFL. Feel free to comment on anything we've talked about. Ronan, what's your last thing, man?
Yeah, I'm going to bring up a barn burner in New England as the Chargers beat the Patriots 6-0. I'm just going to go down the play sheet or the possession sheet. We have a three and out, followed by a three and out, followed by a fumble, followed by a three and out, followed by a three and out, followed by another punt, but this one was six plays. Followed by a three and out, followed by a Chargers field goal, followed by a punt, followed by a punt, followed by a three and out, followed by another Chargers field goal. And then one play at the end of the half. And then we have punt, 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 turnover on downs, punt, turnover on downs, end of game. So absolute barn burner in Foxborough, as, you know, unfortunately, people had to watch that football game. Ben?
That was an awful, 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 ugly game. I mean, it's just really ridiculous. It's rare, and I don't mean to pile on here, it's rare that I come away from a game thinking both coaches maybe should be asked to go at the end of the season. I mean, and that's, you know, I'm not trying to pile on Belichick or Staley there, but that was kind of my emotion, is that that was a clown show, to be honest about it. 6-0. There were better players on the field than to have that 6-0 thing going on. So I'm going to hit three things really quick. Hats off to the Colts, 7-5. They are 6th or 7th for the playoffs. Hats off to the Houston Texans, 7-5. They are just barely missing the playoffs at the moment, but they're sitting right there on the cusp. And then hats off to the Miami Dolphins. That offense is back red hot again. I know it's against the Washington Commanders, but when you watch some of the things that, again, I mentioned this early in the season, some of the things that the Dolphins do schematically, and that's a big word, it's pretty simple things they're doing, but just these simple little things that get their receivers wide open, not just Tyreek Hill, but everybody, and then Tua's quick release to go with it, it's really a beautiful thing to watch. It's when it's all together, it's the most fun offense in the league to watch, as I mentioned last week, just really a beautiful, fluid, schematic thing of beauty, really. Just a fantastic offense that they're doing. Not just this week, but over several weeks. Simon?
My last thing before we close things out was also about the Indianapolis Colts. Winners of their last four. This team is pure chaos week in and week out. You love to see it. And just, we were talking about some bad jobs by some coaching staffs, right? Shane Steichen looks like just a home run hire of a coach. Think about all the things that this team has gone through this season between the Jim Irsay tweets of, gosh, the fact that I could even ask you which month I'm talking about is enough. But Anthony Richardson, the injury, Jonathan Taylor, contract talks, go get Zach Moss, and then he gets hurt, and then he comes back and gets hurt again, and you talk about trying to stay true to the offensive line after the struggles they had last year, the Bernard Raymond progression we've seen. You draft Anthony Richardson, you get him in a position where he looks like he knows what he's doing those first couple of weeks, and then he gets hurt, you have to go to the backup, you release Shaq Leonard in the middle of this. It doesn't matter, man. They just win football games. So shout out to Shane Steichen, because We can sit here and make excuses for coaches all day long. I know I've done it. That guy has really done an impressive job with the Colts. And yeah, like Ben said, I mean, they're right in the playoff hunt. They play the Bengals, the Steelers, the Falcons, the Raiders, the Texans. They could win 10 games this year. And we would not have expected that, even if everything had gone right for them. So shout out to the Colts, shout out to Shane Steichen. Also, it's a shame that their quote-unquote primetime game this year was the London game against the Patriots. Not one, or Germany, I don't even know. Not one person watched it in any country, no matter what country it was played in. Let's get them flexed into a game. I need to watch one of these chaotic games from them. Maybe that Week 18 versus the Texans. Let's make that happen. Yes. Anybody else got anything?
Thanks, everybody, for listening. Simon, shut us down, man.
Thank you all so much for listening to another episode of the Stat Sheet Podcast. Like Ben said, make sure you're listening to all the podcasts on Box Score Network. Follow Box Score at B Score Network for updates. Follow us at Stat Sheet Pod for updates, as well as any fun interactions during the week. We appreciate it. We will talk to you all next week. For Ronan, for Ben, for me, thank you all so much. Have a good week.